Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm easy like Sunday morning.
Pop stars love to dabble in country music, but making a great country album might not be so easy. I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, Lionel Richie is the latest country outsider to don the musical equivalent of a 10-gallon hat. We'll hear how other artists have fared, from Ray Charles to Lady Gaga. And we'll debate Lionel Richie's twangy new album in another
Soundcheck Smackdown.
There's a new sheriff in town, and his name is Wild Bill Shakespeare. The Old West is the setting for a new production of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. The cast will saddle up for a live performance in our studio. All of that on Soundcheck after the news.
Hello, is it me you're looking for?
Lionel Richie says hello, or maybe it should be howdy, to country music. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, the 80s balladeer just released an album of his greatest hits, redone with a Nashville twang. And that calls for one of our Soundcheck Smackdown debates. Plus, a new musical production of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew is set in the American frontier. We'll hear a live performance. But before we get to all that, it's true. Lionel Richie, the singer who launched his career as part of the 70s funk group The Commodores, just put out an album of country versions of his own songs. It's called Tuskegee, and it includes 13 of the singer's best-known hits, performed as duets with some of Nashville's biggest names, like Jennifer Nettles in the background. We'll debate the new album in a bit, but Lionel Richie is hardly the first pop star to hop the musical fence into Americana. And joining me now from the music city itself, from Nashville, is Billboard's correspondent, Deborah Evans Price. Deborah, welcome back.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you having me back.
So why is this a kind of a trend? Why do pop artists want to go country?
I think country music is a great vehicle for telling great stories. And that appeals to, you know, pretty much every creative person. And a lot of these artists, too, have country music, you know, have country rural backgrounds. And so, you know, Lionel Richie grew up in Tuskegee, Alabama, listening to Patsy Cline and, you know, people on the radio like that. So this just seemed like something that was a natural fit for him.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, in a market where increasingly CDs don't sell, people don't buy physical copies of music, it seems like country music is a little bit of a, you know, kind of a safe haven for people who are looking to actually sell some records.
Exactly, because the country audience is a very active consumer base. You know, ticket sales in the country genre are doing real well. Country radio stations are, you know, going gangbusters. I mean, the country format is just, it's America's music. You know, it has a very wide demographic.
So why hasn't country music embraced, you know, digital downloading and even piracy to the extent that other parts of the pop music market have?
Oh, today's younger country artists, Jason Aldean, Brad Paisley, you know, Lady Antebellum, all these artists are selling tons of digital downloads. So I think there's a perception that the country consumer is backward and not as into the digital frontier, but I don't think that's the case anymore.
Okay, so Lionel Richie going country, but as we say, there's been a long list going back to Ray Charles, who went country in 1962 with this album called Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music.
Dreams of yesterday. Dreams of yesterday. Those happy hours that we once knew. Though long ago. It still made me blue. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has stood still since we've been apart.
They can't stop loving
That is Ray Charles from his 1962 album, the prosaically titled Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music, an album that, Deborah, really kind of set the bar, didn't it, for people trying to do something different, going country.
It did. I mean, that album is a classic. You know, so many of the young artists today reference that as something that, you know, it stood the test of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, Ray set the bar, and, you know, anyone else coming in and looking to do a country project really had to know their stuff and be able to deliver it in a way that, you know, that he did, which was just stunning.
So since Ray Charles, we've seen a lot of other examples of musicians from outside the country world trying to get in. Can you generalize? Are there certain types of music that work better than others? Do the artists need to know country music to do it well?
I think they need to be familiar. I think that country radio in particular can smell when somebody's an opportunist or when they really love the format. Uh-huh. I think one of the reasons that Darius Rucker has been so successful, you know, of course, Darius was the front man for Hootie and the Blowfish.
Right.
Darius grew up listening to country music. And when his first country album came out and he was visiting radio stations to promote it, they couldn't stump him. They could ask him any question on the history of country music, and he knew it because he loves country music. Mm-hmm. So that first record, he had 3 number one hits and a top 3. I mean, that's just unheard of. He really is, in terms of today's, you know, crossover artists coming in from another format, Darius has had unsurpassed success. No one has done what he's been able to do.
What about someone like, I mean, let's go back to the 60s. What about Bob Dylan with Nashville Skyline? Did Nashville smell a rat there, or did they get on board?
No, I think because of his reputation as a great songwriter, and Nashville's known as a songwriter's town,
right.
Always has been. I think, you know, his reputation as a songwriter and his respect for country music, I think, endeared him to people in that time period. And
all
kind
right.
of a little-known fact, Charlie Daniels, Devil Went Down to Georgia
right,
fame,
right.
played on that album. Charlie had just moved to town not long before that.
Mm-hmm. What about the Welsh pop singer Tom Jones and Say You'll Stay Until Tomorrow in the mid-70s? How did that go down with country folk?
They loved it. They loved it. And it's funny, John, because I worked my way, you know, not in the 70s. By the time I got to country radio, that song was the gold standard. But
a golden oldie?
Exactly. But I worked my way through college as a country disc jockey in Shreveport, and that was one of our most requested golden oldies. Isn't that funny? I mean, that just people love Tom Jones doing country. You know.
All right. Well, here are 3 examples, as Deborah Evans Price has been describing to us. Bob Dylan, 1969's Nashville Skyline, Tom Jones from 76, and Hootie and the Blowfish's Darius Rucker.
Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big friend's bed. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big brass bed.
Say you stay until tomorrow. I can't face tonight alone.
I woke up again this morning, and when you know it, pouring rain. I went and burned a pot of coffee, and like us, I poured it down the drain. 'Cause I didn't know.
That is Darius Rucker, formerly of the pop band Hootie and the Blowfish, and now a very successful country music singer and songwriter. The comeback song from his 2010 album, Charleston, South Carolina, 1966. We also heard Tom Jones with Say You'll Stay Until Tomorrow, and Bob Dylan's Lay, Lady, Lay from Nashville Skyline. Speaking with Deborah Evans Price, Billboard Magazine's Nashville correspondent, Lionel Richie has a new album of his greatest hits, redone Nashville style. And so we're talking about the history of musicians crossing over from pop into country. And Deborah, one of the previous times you've been on Soundcheck was back in 2007 to talk about Bon Jovi going country. And that turned out to be the first Bon Jovi record ever to debut at number one. How did they manage that?
I think, number one, it was a great pairing, you know, with Jennifer Nettles of Sugarland, and a great song. I mean, when something is a hit like that, no matter who's singing it, it's hard to deny a great record. But I think Bon Jovi's star power, you know, how hot Jennifer was in the format at the time and still is, I just think that all, you know, the elements collided to make that a huge record.
This is a little bit from the album Lost Highway by Bon Jovi. Number one album for Bon Jovi called Lost Highway, their country effort. And Deborah, it strikes me that, you know, the sound of country music these days isn't that far from the sound that, you know, the arena rock that Bon Jovi was known for anyway. You can still hear a lot of that in this Lost Highway record. How much does that kind of ease the transition for people who are looking to go country when country has become so close to mainstream pop?
It really does ease the transition. And, you know, we here in Nashville talk a lot about the pendulum swinging back and forth. And right now in country music, it is pretty far into that pop rock, you know, area. Mm-hmm. With acts like Jason Aldean and Eric Church and, you know, edgier country artists. And then it seems like, you know, every few years it'll kind of swing back towards the traditional element, like it did in the 80s with Randy Travis. Mm-hmm. But we are definitely in the more progressive pop rock kind of sound, you know, these days. So that does help it be easier for people to come into the format.
To the point that Lady Gaga, of all people, was able to release a country version of Born This Way last spring. Did that work for the country radio folks?
I don't think it was a big success at radio, but I think fans loved it because one of the things that everyone, you know, enjoyed that song, but the original production was very synthetic compared mm-hmm. to the earnest emotion in the lyrics. So that's one of the circumstances where, you know, the country really made a great lyric shine. It really maybe, you know, suited it better than the original production.
Deborah Evans Price is Billboard Magazine's Nashville correspondent. We've been talking about some of the folks who've preceded Lionel Richie in crossing over into country music. Deborah, nice speaking with you again.
Always nice to speak with you, John. Thanks for having me on.
Lady Gaga with Born This Way, the country road version.
Being transgender life, I'm on the right track. Baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, should I orient me? I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave.
Up next, we debate Lionel Richie's new country-flavored album in a Soundcheck Smackdown debate. And then later, a visit from cast members of the new production of William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. It's set in the American West, and we'll hear a live performance of songs from it coming up on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This 1986 hit, Dancing on the Ceiling, has been transformed into a country hoedown on Lionel Richie's new album called Tuskegee. The pop star teamed up with country stars like Kenny Chesney, Shania Twain, and in this case, the group Rascal Flatts, to record country versions of some of his biggest hits. The resulting album is expected to debut near the top of this week's Billboard 200. Now, despite its strong sales out of the gate, we're still wondering whether Lionel Richie's new album is country strong or country wrong. It's a question for this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And joining me here in the Soundcheck studio is Sean Manning, author of Rock and Roll Cage Match, Music's Greatest Rivalries Decided. And joining us by phone from Philly is Joe Hudak, senior editor for TV Guide magazine and music writer for Country Weekly magazine. Joe, Sean, guys, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, Jamba Jamba.
Thanks for having us.
Joe, let me start with you. You were surprised by this album, pleasantly or unpleasantly?
Oh, very pleasantly. You know, when I first heard about this project, I was certainly skeptical. You know, duets albums have such a reputation for being disconnected, calculated, and really cheesy affairs. But I think this one really unites Lionel with the artists, and you could hear that camaraderie, I think, come through.
What were you actually, were you expecting a kind of, some kind of Frankenstein of 80s ballads matched with Nashville twang?
You know, I really was. I was expecting, sub out some of these instruments, and then we'll sub in some steel guitar. But it doesn't feel that way. And, you know, you hear these stories of artists recording duet records. One artist is in another studio. One comes in well after and just fills in their parts. But that certainly isn't the case here. I think Lionel's intentions are true, and the results stand on its own.
I know you interviewed Lionel, and I want to come back to that in a moment. But, Sean, I'm going to guess you disagree. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think my first thought was at least you spared Running with the Night. That was the first thought I had. But I actually...
The guy has enough hits that he could leave a few off.
Yeah. But I actually think that for me, he didn't go country enough. I thought that, you know, my impression was that he did only add a couple elements. The arrangements aren't that different. And I think that part of the difficulty I had with it was that it makes it a little bit more serious. You know, the fun of Lionel Richie's songs is that they are a bit campy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this kind of makes it a bit
sober. Well, now, let me ask you that. Do you think Lionel Richie, when he wrote these songs, intended them to be kind of campy and, you know, kind of poppy just in the moment? Or did he...
Oh, I'm not saying that as a critique. I think that's... I'm a big fan of that. And I think, you know, the guy is coming from a pop-funk background with the Commodores. And so I think that is part of his sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that... the one thing I will say is I agree that I think his heart is in the right place with this. I agree with Deborah. That, you know, his roots from Alabama and so forth,
right.
I think he's not really trying to capitalize on.
Well, and as Deborah had mentioned in our previous segment, he is from Tuskegee.
Right.
Hence the title of the album. Now, this is odd. We asked both of you guys to pick a track that exemplifies what you like or dislike about the record, and you both picked the same song, Stuck on You, featuring Darius Rucker. Joe, what do you like about this?
I just love its easygoing nature. You know, I think it sums up the whole album. This is a song that was a hit for Lionel on the country charts in 1984. And if you go back and look at the actual single cover for that, he's wearing a very ill-advised cowboy hat. So fortunately, he didn't... He didn't do that in this case. But it's just, you know, I love the little asides between he and Darius. At the end, you hear him say, oh, thanks for dropping by, Darius. And I think their voices work well together. It's just a really nice vibe to it. Easygoing, and you can't beat that.
Darius dropping by didn't do it for you, Sean.
Oh, my gosh. He does those asides on every song. The Willie Nelson song is like, thanks, Willie. Hey, no problem. Rascal Flatts, thanks, guys. Okay, no problem. It's like, we get it. You guys are having a good time, but... You know, that was a little much for me. And I also think that, again, it's really just the addition of the slide guitar. It's like, all right, is that all that country is to these? It kind of diminishes a little bit.
Here's the song. Joe likes it. Sean doesn't. Make up your own mind. The song is Stuck on You from Lionel Richie.
Stuck on you. Been a fool too long. I guess it's time for me to come on home. Yes, I'm on my way. So hard to see that a woman like you can wait around for a man like me. Yes, I'm on my way. I'm mighty glad to stay.
That is Lionel Richie with Darius Rucker on the album Tuskegee, his new album of covers of his own greatest hits in a country style. Stuck on You is the name of that one. Tuskegee is out now, and you can watch Lionel Richie performing with some of his country music collaborators in an April 13th CBS special called, predictably, Lionel Richie and Friends. Sean Manning is no friend of Lionel Richie, at least not for this record. He's smacking down the album. Joe Hudak is defending the honor of Tuskegee on the line with us from Philadelphia. And
What about his country music bona fides? I mean, Sean, do you give the guy credit for having some kind of country in his background?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the things that works for the album. But I think for me, the interesting thing was, you know, because of that shift that Deborah was talking about of country towards a more pop-oriented sound, a lot of the original songs kind of would pass for country these days.
Right.
So by him, you know, maybe substituting a harmonica and easy instead of a guitar or so forth, it almost makes it less country. I think it was kind of an ironic thing about the album for me.
Hmm. Joe, you mentioned before that this song Stuck on You actually was on the country charts back in the 80s, right?
That's right. In 1984, this was his country, kind of a country crossover, and I believe it hit number 24, if I'm mm-hmm. not mistaken.
So what do you make of the fact that every song on the album has yet another country music superstar? I mean, does he give the impression of someone who's just trying a little too hard, maybe he doesn't trust himself to carry the ball by himself?
No, you know, I don't think so. You know, he has one of the reputation for one of the nicest guys in the biz, and I think you can feel that coming through as he lets these duet partners soar. You know, he asks them to come on board and do the songs the way they would want to do them. And as he said to me when I spoke to him for TV Guide, he said, if I wanted to go back and hear me, I'll just play the original. So you do something else with it. And I think they did do that. And the irony is that I actually agree with a lot of what Sean's saying. I find that it is very similar to what's out there today. But I think that's just the nature of country music these days.
The fact that, as Deborah Evans-Price was telling us before, country music has sort of moved into the pop realm anyway, sonically at least.
Oh, without question. Without question, yeah.
So a song like Easy, you know, I mean, you listen to this from the new album and you think, wow, was that always there? Did it always have that country thing in the background? Well, it certainly does now.
So I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning, yeah. That's why I'm easy, so easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning. Sing it for me, brother.
Why in the world would anybody wanna put chains on me? Paid my dues to make it. Everybody wants me to be what they want me to be. But I'm not happy when I try to fake it.
Easy. From Lionel Richie, featuring Willie Nelson from the new album, Tuskegee. Now, Sean, you said before that one of the things you don't like about this is it's so close to the original, and you just swap out one instrument and you put in this case, a harmonica, where in the original it was like a small chorus, a men's chorus. And then Willie Nelson comes along, and, I mean, does that change the tenor of this for you?
Well, I think I want to bring up the version of Hello, which is probably the most different arrangement because in this case it's a duet. Now, everybody that's seen that music video knows that this song is about the longing that an acting teacher feels for his blind student and unrequited love.
So when this was a famous video back when.
So when you bring the blind acting student into the studio and have her sing the part, it totally defeats the purpose of the song. So the arrangement choices that he does make, I think, are kind of misdirected.
Soundcheck listeners, our SmackDown debate this week, the topic is this new Lionel Richie country music record called Tuskegee. What do you think? Leave a comment on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. So, Joe, it sounds like from what you've been saying that maybe we shouldn't be surprised that he's gone in this direction, that Lionel Richie has gone country.
No, you know, I don't think so. I think that, you know, as we sit and talk about this project, I mean, it kind of stirs some nostalgia for three different groups of people. I think there's those who knew Lionel as a Commodore, those who discovered him in the 80s, and then those who knew him from his country work. And I think he's just expanding on that last one here and exploring that territory a little further.
Now, let me ask you both this. I'm just kind of curious. I mean, what was your opinion of Lionel Richie as, you know, the pop superstar of the late 70s and through the 80s. I mean, Sean, were you a fan?
Oh, I love Lionel Richie, and I feel so guilty about being here right now that I actually went to Best Buy and bought the album so that, and I have it in studio, John sees it, so that he has $12 of my money. So
Sean is doing the classic radio thing of holding the record up to the microphone.
That is my apology to Lionel. So that's how bad I feel
about
this.
So you don't like it, but you went and you bought it just to support the guy.
Who doesn't like Lionel Richie?
All right, all right. What about you, Joe? Were you a fan of his?
Oh, without question. I have very distinct memories of lying on my parents' living room floor listening to the Can't Slow Down record. So to hear him reinvent them with a country twang now when it's part of what we do for a living, it's kind of interesting how things come full circle.
Now, in 1987, he did this country crossover song called Deep River Woman, and there's a new version of it on the new album, this time with the country music group Little Big Town.
All I do is think of you, the writing's on.
Lionel Richie with Little Big Town guesting on this version of Deep River Woman from the new album Tuskegee by Lionel Richie. The subject of this week's Soundcheck Smackdown, Sean Manning's with us, author of Rock and Roll Cage Match, Music's Greatest Rivalries Decided, A Reluctant Foe. Friend is Joe Hudak, who's on the line with us from Philly. He's senior editor for TV Guide magazine and music writer for Country Weekly magazine. And Joe, what do you think of this this new version of this 1987 song?
Oh, I think it may even be better than the original, with all apologies to Alabama, with whom he recorded it in 87. I think Little Big Town is one of the most underappreciated and underawarded vocal groups in all of country right now, and I can just play that on repeat over and over again. Put it on headphones, and I defy anyone to put it on headphones and not enjoy that.
Now, you know, I have to sort of confess, I asked you guys what you whether you were fans back in the day, and you both were. I really wasn't. For the most part. And so coming to this record, I was kind of like, oh my God, what is this going to be? I am really surprised at how well these songs wear their country music clothing. Now, Sean, that may have something, I mean, that sort of goes to your point of maybe he didn't go far enough. But there is one cover here where it seems to not be very country-ish at all, and that's All Night Long with Jimmy Buffett. What do you make of this?
Yeah, you said earlier 13 of country's biggest stars, and I would make the caveat 12 plus Jimmy Buffett. which, you know, obviously Jimmy Buffett has his own roots in country music, his early albums, A1A, and so forth. But he's gone quite far afield from that. So, yeah, it's just a bizarre addition to me with the kettle drums and so forth.
Sean, you going to stand up for this one? I mean, Joe?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's so much of that Caribbean cowboy sound in country music these days.
Here it is again. Yet another country Caribbean cowboy tune.
Come on and sing it long right here.
Get that man a margarita. He sounds like he's having fun. I mean, you
know. Oh, they're all having such a good time. It just makes me so envious. They're hanging out in the studio. He's out with Shania Twain in her Bahamas beach house. It's too much.
Lionel Richie with Jimmy Buffett and a version of All Night Long. That is fun from the new album Tuskegee. And it's been the subject of this week's Soundcheck Smackdown debate. Sean Manning's been with me here in the studio. Joe Hudak on the line with us from Philly. Joe, you interviewed him for TV Guide this week. Do you think we'll hear more country music from Lionel in the future?
You know, I think, too. He alluded to a volume two of this just because he couldn't line up the schedules with other artists like Lady Antebellum and the band Perry, who were both performing with him on the CBS special, which actually taped last night in Vegas. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see volume two come out with some songs from them and some other artists.
Well, Lionel Richie will be performing with some of his country music friends on April 13th, a CBS special called Lionel Richie and Friends. Sean, Joe, thank you guys for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks, John.
Still to come, we'll hear about a production of William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew that's set in the American West, and you'll hear songs from it in just a moment. Now, if you like musical theater, you might want to check out the new exclusive stream of the cast recording of the new Broadway production, Newsies. The album doesn't come out till next week, but you can listen to the entire Newsies cast recording on our webpage at wnyc.org/soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Shakespearean comedy meets Italian opera on the 19th century American frontier in a new production of The Taming of the Shrew. I know that sounds crazy, but there's a surprisingly convincing story behind this new version from Theater for a New Audience. Director Aaron Arbus will tell us why Shakespeare has moved in time and space, and composer-arranger Michael Friedman will explain where all those R-rated songs came from. But first, much of the cast has joined us here in the Soundcheck studio, and we will hear a live performance of When You Kiss an Italian Girl. John Panko is the singer, and we'll hear a live performance on Soundcheck.
I know rave about Italy, I know talk about my country. Any place is the same to me, just so long I got enough to eat. But I like to tell you this, I'm a kisser of plenty, miss. And of all of the sweet kiss, there's one that got the world to beat. When you kiss an Italian girl, boss, oh, you feel well, don't know how to tell her, but you get so excited. You go home that night, you put your left shoe upon the foot, what is right. Let an Italian girl, boss, kiss you upon the cheek, and you won't wash your face for a long time, cause you feel so swell when you kiss an Italian girl. My sweetheart, she look like a freak, got a face just like next week. Every time that I kiss her cheek, right away she look like a hell. Married men, if you got the strife, you can lead a happy life. Every time that you kiss your wife, think of an Italian girl. When you kiss an Italian girl, boss, how you feel, well, I don't know how to tell it, but before much long, you feel it so strong, you go and choke the monkey till he sing the song. Let an Italian girl, boss, kiss you upon the cheek, and you won't wash your face for a long time, cause it feels so sweet when you kiss an Italian girl.
When You Kiss an Italian Girl. Somehow that is part of Theater for a New Audience's new version of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. You heard Jonathan Mastro at our piano and John Panko singing. Let me also introduce you to the director of the new version of The Taming of the Shrew. That's Aaron Arbus. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you.
And also joining me is Michael Friedman, the composer and arranger. Michael, is that your song, or did you find that somewhere?
No, that's unbelievably early Irving Berlin. That's even
no way.
Before Alexander's Ragtime Band, before anything.
Really?
Yeah. So it's one of his earliest songs. He first got on the scene as somebody who...
Shortly after Shakespeare died.
So, yeah, it's one of the joys of working on this production has been uncovering this trove of sort of pre-World War I, late 19th century, very early turn of the century, American music that relates to these themes of the West and of Italy and that connects Shakespeare to all of that.
Aaron, this is going to be, of course, the big question here is we're talking about Shakespeare, the American West, and Italy. How does this the Taming of the Shrew is set in Italy. I understand that. How does it move west?
Well, Shakespeare's play actually has two settings in it, as originally written. We associate Taming of the Shrew with Kate Petruchio, and that, of course, is set in Italy. But it's in fact a play within a play,
right.
And he has he creates a framing device called the Induction, which in his version is set in contemporary England. And so, as we were thinking about this play, and I was thinking about the values of the world, of Shakespeare's world in this play, and he's created a world where it's a world of rough commerce. It's a world where marriage is a transaction. It's a world where women have very limited options. It's a dog-eat-dog world where they're filled with con men and fools and brutes who are sort of lying to each other and scheming and trying to win the prize, whatever that may be. And it's a world where there are strangers coming to town seeking their fortune. And it's a world where there are traveling troupes of players performing Shakespeare plays. And so all of those things made me think about America in the 19th century and the American frontier, where, in fact, Shakespeare was, the most popular playwright.
So even in the gold rush, frontier towns, little tiny hotels and theaters and stuff.
Well, and they have these, you'll look at pictures of these old West towns, and they'll have these immaculate little opera houses where plays got performed. And when I was first talking to Erin about this idea, and she mentioned setting in the American West, what excited me about the connection between Shakespeare and the West and this play was, of course, the other thing that swept America at that time was Italian opera.
In the West?
Especially in the West. They would have these towns in which on Tuesday the Shakespeare players performed, and then on Wednesday some, ramshackle company would come through and do a Bellini opera. So actually Shakespeare and Italian bel canto opera were the two huge hits of the American West during this time.
So these American songs that you've collected and arranged, there are little bits of Italian opera, as we heard at the top of the segment, which are part of it. They are anachronistic, but they to the Shakespeare, but they suit the mood and the kind of the vision of the piece, it sounds like.
Well, so the Induction, which is rarely performed, we are doing in this production, and we are
this set, is again the framing device,
and we're setting that in the 19th century, so that there is this traveling late 19th century. So there's this traveling troupe of players who are using the theatrical vocabulary and the music of their time to put on to tell the Kate Petruchio story, which of course is set in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Kate is the shrew,
yes.
of the Taming of the Shrew. Her younger sister is the one that all these guys are like competing. They're actually bidding,
absolutely,
to marry her.
Yeah,
and Petruchio is the one who tames Kate, so to speak. Now, I want to sort of get back to the sort of the theme of a woman's role in a little bit, but Michael. You did the music for Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
I did, and the lyrics.
Did that lead you into studying 19th century American song, and did that kind of lead you to some of what we're hearing today?
Well, it's funny. I have another piece that I worked on with the Civilians, which is a company I work with a lot, called Paris Commune, that we're going to be doing at BAM in the Next Wave Festival this fall. And Paris Commune, all the songs, it's set in 1871, and all the songs in that were songs that we actually found, in the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, these songs that were written during the Commune, all these popular cabaret songs that have sort of fallen off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that actually was the first time I kind of piqued my interest in this, all this forgotten popular music and how actually fantastic it is. And then in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, we used this song, The Hunters of Kentucky, which was, in fact, Jackson's campaign song. He's the first person to run for president with an actual campaign song. Mm-hmm. And we use that as our curtain call, kind of a punk cover of the Hunters of Kentucky. So I have a continuing interest in sort of forgotten popular music and bringing it back and trying to make it as dangerous and relevant as I think that's what's exciting about popular music.
Right. So where does Waiting at the Church come from?
Waiting at the Church is by the, no one knows who these people are, the great songwriting team of Pether and Lee.
So I'm going to take your word that it's great.
It's a late 19th century song, and it's pretty self-explanatory, but it's the sad story of one woman's travails.
All right. And is this in the show?
Yeah, this is at the beginning of the second act. It sort of is a little prologue to the second act of the show.
All right. We'll hear a live performance on Soundcheck. This is from the Theater for a New Audience edition of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, running at the Duke Theater on 42nd Street through April 21st. And Olwen Fuere is singing here, once again, Jonathan Mastro at our piano.
I'm in a nice bit of trouble, I confess. Somebody with me has had a game. I should by now be a proud and happy bride, but I've still got to keep my single name. I was proposed to by Obadiah Binks in a very gentlemanly way. Gave him all my money so that he could buy a home, and punctually at 12 o'clock today, there was I, waiting at the church, waiting at the church, waiting at the church, when I found he'd left me in the lurch. Oh, how it did upset me. At once he sent me round a note. Here's the very note. This is what he wrote. Can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me.
Waiting at the church. Actually, I recognize that. So you hear that last line, you don't forget that. No, I can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me.
It's one of the great punchlines.
So how does that fit? Who's singing this in the play?
We have...
I should just say again, Olwen Fuere singing it here in the studio.
At the beginning of the frame, of the induction, at the beginning of the play, Sly, who's the character who sort of witnesses then the play. Mm-hmm. Sly is a drunk kicked out of a bar by a barmaid who Olwen plays in the play. And so at the beginning of our second act, the barmaid comes out as kind of a little performance. And I think, you know, partly influenced in our idea of the West and of where this would be, of the sort of Marlene Dietrich Industry Rides Again type thing. And then this song played so well into that kind of persona. And also I think the songs, the double upending of the situation in the song, which is the woman abandoned at the altar, which happens in Taming of the Shrew. And then, of course, at the end, it turns out the man can't marry her because his wife is actually in charge of things. So the gender politics reverse themselves at the end.
So this gets us, Aaron, to the question of gender politics, which has been very problematic for a lot of people with the Taming of the Shrew. The idea that this fiercely independent woman, apparently by the end of the play, you know, has this speech about how it's great to be obedient to your husband, it's the job of a wife and stuff. So how did you approach that?
Well, I must confess I love the sort of the controversy of it, and it is a play that polarizes audiences as sort of in the same way that Merchant of Venice does. George Bernard Shaw thought it was an impossible play, a loathsome play. And Harold Bloom thinks that Kate and Petruchio are going to be the happiest married couple in all of Shakespeare. For me, it's actually a great love story. And it's one of Shakespeare's only investigations into a couple within a marriage. I mean, we get the Macbeths. And we know how that ends, yeah. but you know, most of his comedies end in marriage. You get to the very end of the play, and there's going to be a marriage. In Taming of the Shrew, they get married early on, and then they have to live with each other, which to me is ugly, difficult, existential territory. And that's part of my. That's part of my interest in it. I mean, he is writing a play about a misogynistic society, undoubtedly, and.
But is he being ironic or sarcastic about it? I guess is the question.
Well, I'm not gonna answer that quite yet. But he's truthfully depicting probably the society that he lived in, which bears a, you know, an interesting resemblance to our society, which has. Certainly, you know, there's misogyny is not gone.
Well, and in 19th century America, where you've said it, you know, there's that adds a whole nother layer of
right.
that we could parse. There are two other cast members we haven't heard from yet, and I want to make sure we
yes.
get to hear them. Again, we're speaking with Aaron Arbus, the director of The Taming of the Shrew, Michael Friedman, the composer and arranger, and Michael, Don't Leave Your Wife. This will be sung by John Christopher Jones and Peter Maloney. And is this an old song, too?
Yes, it is. It's an old vaudeville turn, and it's I'd say the lyrics pretty much explain themselves.
Okay.
But
I was hoping that might be the case.
It definitely plays into our theme of the comedy of marriage.
Yes.
This is from the new production by Theater for a New Audience of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew.
There are many married men who lead a double life.
One they lead in cabarets, the other with their wife.
Staying out till 4 while wifey goes to bed at 10.
Looks well on the surface, but just listen, married men. Don't leave your wife alone, waiting for you at home. When you go out nights, I'll tell you what. Maybe she's waiting home,
and maybe she's not.
When you're with Flo
or May,
haunting a new cafe. She may go out with a fella
and not drink sarsaparilla.
So don't leave your wife alone.
What is good for Mr. Gander's good for Mrs. Goose. Wives can go as fast as husbands once you let them loose. Wives can paint the town and make their husbands look like skates. They got paint enough to paint the whole United States. Don't leave your wife alone, waiting for you at home. When you go out nights, I'll tell you what. Maybe she's waiting home and maybe she's not.
When you go out and chase after a pretty face, she may go and do some chasing with some wise brother Mason. So don't leave your wife alone.
That is John Christopher Jones and Peter Maloney singing live in our studio. Once again, Jonathan Mastro at the piano, and Don't Leave Your Wife, an old vaudeville song that appears in the new production of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, done by Theater for a New Audience and running through April 21st at the Duke on 42nd Street, directed by Aaron Arbus, who's been with me, and Michael Friedman, the composer, has been with me as well, composer and arranger. And somehow you guys found a piece of music that brings together opera and the Wild West. the overture from Rossini's William Tell, which, of course, familiar to many Americans, is the theme from The Lone Ranger. What is this, like your curtain call music or something?
Yeah, we
like
used actually as part of the overture and then as the curtain call. And it just seemed like, it was like, oh my gosh, a piece of Italian, a famous piece of Italian opera that then, of course, has been retranslated as a piece of music, the most famous piece of music about the American West. What could be more potent?
So that's part of the fun as well. And to find out how all of these songs, opera arias, early American popular songs, fit into the Shakespearean play, you'll just have to check out The Taming of the Shrew, through April 21st at the Duke on 42nd. Michael, Aaron, and the cast, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And speaking of opera, dare to take Soundcheck's Haiku Challenge. Sum up Wagner's four-opera ring cycle in 17 syllables. Find out how on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. That's going to do it for the show today. Tomorrow, an animal psychologist explains how animals interact with human sound environments, including those that might be harmful, and we hear music specifically made for cats. Plus, a live performance from the San Antonio-based indie rock band, Girl in a Coma. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, the program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. Tune in tomorrow for another Soundcheck.